Good morning, everyone. My name is Glenn, and some of you are going, who is this guy? He hasn't been around that much lately. Actually, I have been here. And I first of all, before we even get into anything, I want to talk about something. Is last week, I heard a rumor about me that someone came to me and said, you're not retiring, are you, Ellie? You're not retiring, are you? Because people think that you're retiring. And it's because I haven't been in the pulpit for the last couple of weeks. And over the summertime, we had our preaching team here a lot. I've been down in the park at the Rochester campus a lot. So let me put that to bed. I am not retiring. You're stuck with me for a little while longer, okay? Don't clap. You don't know what I'm going to say today. I know I've shared this story with some of you before, but can you indulge me for about 90 seconds or 2 minutes or so? It's a story about how Sue, my wife, and I met. She's not here, so I can really embellish this, okay? So this right here is a picture of me about the time I was playing in a rock band, and that's my best friend, Richie Thorpe. We grew up together. He lived on Danbury Lane in Dover. I lived on Atlantic Avenue in Dover. We did everything together. And Richie and I were hanging out during the summertime, and it was right this year that he was working at Davidson Rubber, and I was playing in the rock band, and one day, Richie took this cute girl, where is she? There she is, okay, this cute girl to come see my band. We were playing down in Portsmouth at the Meadowbrook Lounge, and this girl worked with him at Davidson Rubber. And as they came, I saw her dancing on the dance floor, and I said, she's kind of cute. Don't you think she's kind of cute? Yeah. And so as it went, Richie introduced me to this woman named Sue, and I got to know her a little bit that night, and then she left, and I said, boy, he's a lucky guy. The next night, she came back to the band alone. And conveniently, she didn't have a ride home that night. The mind of a woman, huh? So I gave her a ride home, and we got to know each other a little bit. Then the next day, we started talking a little bit, and so we started dating and seeing each other once in a while. And I can remember Sue lived in Rochester. It was on top of a cleaner's down on, as you go out on 125. It used to be a Chinese restaurant there, and she lived on the top floor there. And I remember sitting out on the top of the porch with her, just talking, getting to know her. We were sitting on one of those wooden swings and everything. And we started talking about, okay, let's start dating and see where this ends. And we dated for a while, and then we had to have this talk, the DTR talk. Anybody know what the DTR talk is? The DTR talk is a talk for any guy that's in a relationship. He dreads having it. And when he has it, his throat goes dry and his palms start getting sweaty and he wants to run away. He tries to avoid it at all costs, or at least put it off as long as he can. The DTR talk is this, the determine the relationship talk. So Sue and I had to have this talk. So how serious are we? Are we going to be exclusive for one another? Are we going to commit to one another? Has our relationship gone past admiration and physical attraction? And man, was I physically attracted to that cutie, I'll tell you that. Has it gone to a deeper place of devotion and dedication? So at the time, Sue and I had this DTR talk, and we determined that we would become a thing, okay? Today, in today's lingo, you know how that's done? That's done on Facebook. People go on Facebook and they do this. Right? You see that? The little heart and then in a relationship. And so you are Facebook official that you're in a relationship. And that's so cool. Dave and Allie, my daughter, Allie was dating Dave. I asked him if I could share some of this. And he said yes. I didn't ask you. I'm sorry. It wasn't even 3 years ago that they had their first date. They've been married a little over 2 years. And I can remember talking with Allie, and from what I remember, and I might be a little off on this, after that first date, they came back and they went to their prospective homes, and and they decided to see each other again, and then they decided to see each other again, and then finally, I would imagine that you had to have a DTR talk at some time along the way. You had to determine what kind of relationship are we going to have, and then you know, so you got into that and you had that type of a talk and you decided. In fact, after about 3 or 4 dates, I get a phone call from this guy named David White. He says, "Mr. Boardman," I like that. He said, "I've been dating your daughter and I've been really enjoying it, and now I'd like to ask you out on a date. What do you say to that?" I said, "Sure, okay." And we met up at Dunkin' Donuts in Alton, and Dave and I had a DTR discussion. We determined his relationship with me. And I'll tell you guys, dads of daughters, I wish that upon you. I hope that you have that, that your daughter finds a man that it respects her enough to come to you and say, "This is who I am. I want you to know me, and I am going to pursue your daughter." That's such a cool thing. Over the next several weeks, I want us to do this, okay? I want us to examine our relationships. I want us to have a DTR with Jesus. We need to determine at some point in our life, at some point in our walk, in our relationship with Jesus, what kind of relationship we're going to have. Now, I realize some of you here, it's your very first date. That you don't even know about us. You're coming here going, "Whoa, I don't know about all this stuff that's going on." And you don't even really know about this guy with this God that we call Jesus. And so you're just kind of feeling it out. You're not ready for that DTR. And that's okay. That's really okay. You can sit and you can listen. But there's a lot of us here that I think that at this point in our time with God, with Grace Community Church, we need to have a determined relationship conversation with Jesus. Today, we're beginning this new sermon series here called Not a Fan. And it's based on this book. This book is written by a guy named Kyle Eidelman, and he's a pastor from Louisville, Kentucky. We have this book available for you to be able to purchase for less than it costs. It costs $14.99. I think we're selling it for $5. Okay? And we're gonna be spending time. He talks about a lot of really good stuff and a lot of really convicting stuff. And we're gonna be spending time using some of the precepts that he presents here. And this book, Not a Fan, is the basis of our series for the next 5 or 6 weeks here. I want to read to you what Kyle says about having a DTR with Jesus. This is found on page 23, if you want to go home and read it. He says, "So here's what I want to ask you to do. In your mind, picture yourself walking into a local coffee shop. You grab a snack, you get a drink, and then you walk towards the back where it isn't crowded, and you find a seat at a small table. You take a sip of your drink and enjoy it for a few quiet minutes. Now, imagine that Jesus comes in and he sits down next to you. You know it's Jesus because of his blue sash that he's wearing. You're unsure what to say, and in the awkward moment, you try to break the silence by asking him to turn your drink into wine. He gives you the same look he used to give Peter. Before he has a chance to respond, you suddenly realize that you haven't prayed for your food. So you decide to say your prayer out loud, hoping that Jesus will be impressed. And you start off okay, but understandably, you get nervous and you pray, 'Three things I pray, to love thee more dearly, to see thee more clearly, and to follow thee more dearly, day by day by day.' And you quickly say amen, and then you realize that you're quoting Ben Stiller's prayer from Meet the Parents. Before you have a chance to make things more awkward, Jesus skips past the small talk and gets right to the point. He looks you right in the eye, and he says, 'It's time we define our relationship.' He wants to know how you feel about him. It's your relationship, is it exclusive? Is it just a casual weekend thing, or has it moved past that? How would your relationship with him be defined? What exactly is your level of commitment? Whether you've called yourself a Christian since childhood, or all of this is new to you, Jesus would clearly define what kind of relationship he wants to have with you. Are you a follower of Jesus, or are you some of us are going, okay, why are you even bringing that up? I mean, we're here, aren't we? Isn't everybody at Grace a follower of Jesus? Don't we say that we're followers, you know? Before you answer too quickly, consider the difference between a fan and a follower, okay? The word fan is defined as this, an enthusiastic admirer. Enthusiastic admirer. We're all fans of something, right? A lot of us are fans of some kind of a sporting event. Now, in case you didn't realize, today kicks off the NFL season, and the world champion New England Patriots will be playing. Go ahead, give it up for them. They'll be defending their title, and they'll be playing the Pittsburgh Steelers tonight. Some of you guys will be wearing your favorite players' jerseys as you're watching the game, and you're going to be watching the game on TV, and you'll be cheering like crazy when Brady hits Edelman for a 40-yard pass, and you're really a huge fan, not only of football, but especially of the Patriots, right? But what happens if the Pats lose tonight, 38-3? Are you going to still be a fan after that? And even worse than that, what would happen if the Pats went 0-9 for the beginning of their season here? How much of a fan would you be then? Fan or a follower? What are you? Would you still be an enthusiastic admirer? Some of us are fans of artists and bands and everything. I know people that are fans of Bruce Springsteen up there. Pastor Bernie, if you knew him, was a huge fan of Bruce Springsteen. Some people are fans of Taylor Swift. They follow her and they just love her. Some people, like my daughter, are fans. She's going to be the sermon illustration for today, okay? When she was young, she was a fan of Celine Dion. She knew her songs. She would sing them out loud. Steve is a fan too, okay? Both of you guys. You two can have a little party afterwards, okay? So she would have this admiration and enthusiastic support for Celine Dion. And then there are people that are fans of Weird Al Yankovic. And I don't know why, but they are fans, right? I don't know. They're enthusiastic admirers, but they're not followers. Because they don't know the artist personally. They're not friends with them. They don't make any kind of investment in that artist, except for maybe buying a concert ticket or a CD. But those are just fans. This guy is a follower. Anybody know who this is? Just take a peek at that. Bill Walton, right, you've got it. What is Bill Walton known for? Basketball. In fact, Bill Walton, he played for the Boston Celtics 1 year with Larry Bird when they won a championship, but before then he was with the Trailblazers, and he was really well known for being a college basketball player. He was voted the MVP of college basketball 3 years in a row. He was a fantastic college player. But Bill is also known for something else. In 1967, he went to a rock concert. And there at the rock concert, he found his soulmate. And he found his soulmate in the Grateful Dead. Since 1967, this guy has been to over 854 Grateful Dead concerts. And he says it's not enough. He knows or knew some of the band members are dead, but he knows all the band members intimately by name. In fact, when they play and they tour and they're in his area, they all stay at his house. His house is filled with Grateful Dead memorabilia, and he knows each of them, and they invite him on stage, and he sings with them and everything. This guy is not just an enthusiastic admirer, he's a follower. Do you see the difference? He knows who he's admiring. He's invested in who he's admiring. So back to the question, when it comes to Jesus, are you a fan or are you a follower? All too easily, we can come here on a Sunday morning and we can be fans for Jesus. Woo-hoo! You know, we can sing the songs. We know when he was born. We know his birthday and we know even where he was born. We can even quote some of his words that he says. And we might even say that we know that he died on a cross and that he died for me. And we are identifying with him that way. And we are enthusiastic admirers of him. But do you really know him? Do you really know him? Are we just fans? Jesus, when he walked this earth, he wasn't looking for fans. In fact, he was completely the opposite. He wanted followers. He wanted surrendered, committed, sold-out followers. Are you a fan or a follower? The answer to this question is going to guide how you live today, how you live the rest of your life, and how you're going to live in the hereafter. Are you a fan or a follower? See, a fan is someone who wants to be close enough to Jesus to get his benefits, but they don't want to be so close that it requires something of them. A fan is someone that will call themselves a Christian. They'll have the t-shirt. They'll have the bumper sticker and the fish thing on the back of their car. They might own a Bible or two, but they don't want to be so close to Jesus that he might interfere with parts of their life that they don't want him to have anything to do with. A fan will say, here, I'm here for today. I'm here for Sunday at the game, and I'm cheering you on, Jesus. But don't talk to me for the rest of the week. Don't interfere with my life. Don't mess it up for me. In the book of Luke, Jesus gives an invitation for people that he was dealing with, and not only them, 2,000 years ago, not only the disciples, but for us, he gives us the invitation to become a follower of him. Not a fan, a follower. And we might say, I'm a follower already because my parents are followers. I'm a follower already because I'm a member of Grace Community Church. I'm a follower already because I obey the rules. But listen to how Jesus phrases this. We're going to look at one verse today. One. And I hope it changes our thinking a little bit. Luke 9:23 says this. And he said to all, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. Everybody say ouch. Everybody say ouch. Everybody say, ouch. Thank you. What Jesus does here is he makes it clear that to follow him, it's not just a belief. We say, I believe Jesus. Sure, yeah, I believe Jesus. To follow him is not just a belief. It's not just thinking in your mind that you know him. It's not just an acceptance of facts. Following Jesus takes action. It takes movement. The invitation that Jesus is giving here, it's just not believing something is true, because we can all say, well, I believe that. But it requires action. And I want to say this gently but firmly, I guess, is that a significant threat to the church today, to the American church today, to our church here, is that many of us consider ourselves Christians, but we're not followers. We don't follow him. We don't have the investment in him. Let's take a closer look at what Jesus says when he says, follow me. The first word here, it says, if anyone would come after me. So he's saying this. Look, if you want to call yourself a follower, anyone, he's saying everyone that calls himself a follower. All that calls yourself a follower. You have to do these things. But then there's this other side of that word, anyone, as he's saying, listen, this invitation that I'm giving you, it's open to everyone. It's not just an exclusive club that you belong to. It just means all the people that I'm talking to. You are invited. See, the rabbis for that day, you have to understand this culture that they had then. The rabbis for the day used to have followers, and they'd have applications, if you would, you know, to be able to become a follower of a certain rabbi. And this person that would fill out the application, they'd have to, if they wanted to follow you, they would have to be born into the right family, they'd have to have the right background, they'd have to have the right education, they would have to have the right credentials, and maybe after all of that, they could start to follow the rabbi. But Jesus is saying here, hey, I'm not taking applications. I'm just giving invitations. invites the unqualified. He invites the unlovable. And he invites the unworthy. He invites me. He invites you. It's a story about a guy named Matthew who was a tax collector. And Matthew, he was like a traitor to the people, the Jewish people at that time, because he was working for the government and he was working for the Romans who were enslaving or occupying the Jewish people at the time. He was taking money for them and taking a cut for himself. And Jesus goes to Matthew and he says these words, "Follow me." Matthew, of anyone, should have been kicked out of the group. Jesus says, "Follow me." This invitation is to you and me, and that's good news. That's really, really good news for us to be able to hear that. Because the tendency for us is that we want to make some following Jesus about something else. Maybe we have to earn our way to follow Jesus, or maybe we have to have these qualifications, but Jesus is saying, no. Anyone can follow. So the next word here, look at this. It says, if anyone would come after me. This phrase in the original Greek, it's this word that's not used too much in the Bible. And it was like this romantic pursuit is what he's saying. It's like a guy passionately pursuing a girl and saying, come after me, you know? And that's what Jesus, he's using that phrase. He's saying, hey, if you want to be my follower, you have to come after me. You have to passionately pursue me. I remember back in the early days when I had a relationship with my wife. I still have a relationship with my wife. When I was beginning my relationship with my wife, back in those days when I was in the band, I remember I used to play down in at the Cape. And then with a day off, the following day, we'd be playing up in Vermont, up where Mitch used to live, you know, back up that way. And during that time, instead of just shooting straight up like the rest of the band did, I remember I would go back to Rochester just so I could spend a couple of hours with Sue. And then I would go up to Vermont. I was pursuing her. I was passionate about her. I was coming after her, if you would. So that's what love does. So here's the question for you. Are you passionately pursuing Jesus? Are you going out of your way to come to him? What type of relationship are you seeking with him? Are you willing to go the extra mile? For us, for some of us, our pursuit is coming and sitting in the pew of a church. Or our pursuit is that we are here, we're not really that passionate about it. We're here because we're supposed to be here. We're here because my parents bring me. We're here because my wife makes me. We're here, for whatever reason. And we're just not looking for a passionate relationship with Jesus. We're looking for that casual, weekend relationship. Continue on here. He says, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself. That word deny, it chafes, doesn't it? It rubs us the wrong way. It's counter-cultural to what we're about. Because everything in our culture is not about denying ourselves, it's about satisfying ourselves. We like big cars, we like big TVs, we like big coffees, we have iPhones, we have comfy recliner chairs, we like caramel lattes and all of this stuff, anything that makes us comfortable and satisfies us. We like to take care of me, right? I like to take care of me. Finish this phrase for me. If it feels good, do it. Some of us remember that, okay? If it feels good, do it. And that was the mantra of my generation as we were raising up. But Jesus is saying here, hey, that's not my mantra. That's not what I'm looking for. He's saying, I'm looking for a commitment for you to say yes to me and no to yourself. Deny yourself. And that's the part of the faith that we don't like to really talk so much about, you know? Then he says this, if anybody would deny themselves, let him take up his cross daily and follow me. What's the cross? What's the cross a symbol of? Take a look at that cross back there. What is that cross a symbol of? symbol of sacrifice, and it's a symbol of love. And Jesus, he's saying here, if you want to be my follower, you not only have to love me, you have to sacrifice. You have to take your cross up daily. There are many examples in the Bible where Jesus was talking with people that said, hey, I want to be a follower of you. And then he challenges them. There was one place in this chapter 9 of Luke, a little bit later on, you can go home and read it. And a guy comes to him and he says these words. He says, I'll follow you wherever you go, Jesus. And Jesus looks at him, and I don't think he was mocking him or I think he had compassion on him, but he was probably thinking, buddy, you don't know where I'm going. You really want to say that? And he says these words to him. He says, foxes have holes and birds in the air have their nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. In other words, he's saying, listen, bud, pal, you're saying you'll follow me anywhere? I'm homeless. You want to follow me now? Seems at the end of that conversation, the guy bugs out. He couldn't take it. He didn't really mean wherever you go. And there were some, I guess, conditions that he wanted met. There was some stipulations that he had in order to follow Jesus. And Jesus is saying, no, you want to follow me? You have to put that down. And then you have to pick up a cross and follow me. You know, as we approach our relationship in the same way as this guy sometimes, we say, hey, I want to be your follower, Jesus. Yeah, I believe. I want to be your follower. And he says, okay, but before you follow me, you have to forgive this person. You go, no, maybe not. That cross is too big. Or, I want to be your follower, Jesus. Okay, that means you have to surrender your sex life to me. Ah, that's off limits, buddy. You can't have that. Or I want to be a follower of Jesus. Okay, then that part of your life that you are holding back from me, you have to lay that down and pick up what I have for you. That bottle in the cabinet, the places that you go, the people you hang out with, your checkbook, you have to deny all of that. And you have to pick up the cross. You have to sacrifice in order to follow me. See, I'm just trying to be real with us here today, because we are lazy Christians sometimes. And I'm all about how Jesus accepts us as who we are. And I'm all about that he doesn't really require much of us. But then I'm all about he requires everything of us if we want to be his follower. I'm going to end this morning and ask these three questions, okay? First one is this. Why are you here? I think, you know, I get a little bit of an ovation when I started. I wonder how much of an ovation I'll get after all of this. Why are you here, guys? If you read through the Gospels, there's so many times that Jesus draws a line in the sand for someone. And he says, I dare you to step over that if you want to be my follower. One time in John chapter 6, Jesus was at the height of his ministry. He was very popular. He was preaching to thousands and thousands of people. He just fed 5,000 plus a bunch of other people, the loaves and fishes. You've heard the story before. And then he realizes, he probably knew all along because he's God, but he realizes why they were coming. They weren't coming for his teaching. They weren't coming for him to make an investment in him. They were coming for the free meal, for the happy meal. They were coming for the show. They were coming for the miracles. They were coming to see what would happen and see what they could get out of it all. So why are you here? Are you here to see what you get? Are you here for the free coffee? Are you here for the friendly people or the good music or the really handsome preacher? I know you're not here for the comfortable seats. Are you here because you are coming after Jesus? second question is this. Are you all in? Being a follower of Jesus, as we've already talked about, requires complete commitment. There's no bartering. There's no bargaining. There's no, I'll give you this much, Lord, but I'm going to keep this much. And if you do this for me, how many of us have had this prayer? I know I have. God, if you get me out of this trouble, then I will. Right? And then we don't. And he does. When you become a follower of Jesus, you have to go all the way in. A follower of Jesus does whatever it takes to follow him. And a fan will be on board as long as he gets what he wants. As long as his team's winning. A follower is all in, no matter what. And the final question here. And this is the question that we're going to be asking over the next few weeks here. Are you a fan or a follower? Am I a fan or a follower? Let's go to the Lord right now and ask him that. Father, these are hard words that we're hearing from Jesus, but they're good words. He's opened up the invitation for everyone here to have life, to have a new life. It's not all hard. It's not all difficult stuff that we go through. When we give ourselves over to you, we will recognize that you have the best for us. But, Lord God, we realize also that you don't want just a piece of us. You don't want that, you know, weekend warrior type thing. You want the place in our heart that is locked behind a door and it's hiding over in the corner in the dark. So this morning, Lord, we come to you and we say, I don't want to be that one.